You can make sure KBOO Community Radio continues to inform and entertain Portland and the world for years to come by designating KBOO as a beneficiary in your will. Thank you for thinking about KBOO and the future of independent, community-supported media. For more information, contact Monica Beamer at 503-231-8032 or email monica@kboo.org.
Join KBOO at the Clinton Street Theater for our monthly movie screening night. This month, KBOO proudly presents Alice's Restaurant, the film based on a song based on Arlo Guthrie's 1965 Thanksgiving Day. Alice's Restaurant will screen Wednesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information about the film at KBOO at the Clinton series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And we are hoping to get our guest. Gideon Levy is his name, and he is a rather controversial writer for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. And he recently wrote a column about what is called the Temple Mount. The Israeli Jews call it the Temple Mount, and Palestinians call it the Noble Sanctuary. And it is it's on a hilltop in Jerusalem, and it's supposedly, apparently, the place where King Herod had his second temple. The first temple was reportedly built by King Solomon, and then it was destroyed, and then King Herod rebuilt it, and it too was destroyed. Since then, the site of that temple is now occupied by the Noble Sanctuary and by the Al-Aqsa Mosque. But there has been in the past supposedly a fringe group that wanted to restore the temple, not only restore the temple, but have it as a place for ritual sacrifices, animal sacrifices. And so they trained people to become priests. The priests in the ancient days, the priests sort of were in charge of these animal sacrifices, and so this group would train these priests to sacrifice the animals in the proper way. But for a long time, this was regarded as a sort of a fringe group. But apparently, they become more and more in the center of discourse in Israel. And in his column, Gideon Levy talks about this and sort of foresees what it might lead to in the future, because to rebuild the temple, you would have to tear down this the mosque, which would touch off a religious war, but apparently a lot of Israelis are okay with that. So this is the And since a column came out, this is about a week or so ago, other things have happened, and we will talk about them right now because we have Gideon Levy on the line. Gideon Levy, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you so much.
Well, I've been sort of telling people a bit about the Temple Mount and its history and what went on there and sort of where it is all leading to. So what can you tell us about it?
Be more specific and I'll answer your question. It's a huge, huge subject.
Well, okay. Back in the old days, the ancient days, they conducted animal sacrifices there. It had a lot of religious mythology around it. It was supposedly the place where Abraham started to sacrifice his own son Isaac before he was stopped by an angel or something. And that was one of the things. It's also... You mentioned in your column about the foundation stone. Well, why don't you talk about what is a foundation stone?
This was the core of the temple, of the Jewish temple. But let's not forget that according to the Muslim tradition, Prophet Muhammad went to heaven from this very same place. So this place is holy equally to the Jews and to the Muslims. It's the third holiest place for the Muslims.
Yeah, supposedly it was sort of like they actually called it like the navel of the universe, or the navel of the world. How do they talk about, what do they mean by that?
Look, I'm secular and those things are not exactly talking to my heart.
Uh-huh.
And my idea is that one should separate between religious mythologies, religious beliefs, holy places, and political questions like sovereignty. A place can be very, very holy to any believer in the world and still does not necessarily demand sovereignty on the place. And what? That's all about. Right now we are dealing still with a political dispute over the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your column, you were saying that this has sort of gone that is sort of becoming more and more of a political, less of a fringe religious issue. It's becoming, I guess, more and more Israelis are coming to believe in this mythology about the Temple Mount. Is that true?
No. The Temple Mountain was always a holy place, and so more or less Israelis who believe in it. But this Temple Mountain must be shared between Palestinians and Israelis, between Jews and Muslims, because both have their beliefs about this place. And there is a certain status quo which for years was kept, namely that the Jews are praying by the Wailing Wall and the Muslims are praying at the Temple Mountain. And this status quo should be maintained.
How did that agreement come about?
It was never an agreement. It was when Israel had occupied the Temple Mountain back in 67. Then Defense Minister Moshe Dayan decided that this will be the regularities on this place. And it's better that those regularities will be well kept and then everyone will be happy.
Well, that agreement or this arrangement seems to be falling apart.
This is true, and this is mainly because of political motivations and tensions and not so much religious ones.
So what are those political motivations?
There are the Jewish-Israeli right-wingers who try to provoke the status quo and believe that they have the right also to pray in the place that the Jews didn't pray for decades and centuries, namely on the Temple Mountain itself.
Well, are you saying then, is it a case where these politicians are kind of using the religious people who, they've been around for a long time, are they being used then for these sort of political goals?
This is partly so, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. In your column, you mentioned the red heifer. Tell us about the red heifer.
No, this was one of those strange beliefs that once the temple will be built, after there will be special race of red cows that should be raised. It's really bizarre beliefs and totally marginal beliefs. I just gave it as an example for things which has nothing to do with rational thought or with politics, and are being used for political reasons.
Well, didn't it have to be a cow that was sort of unblemished, not a non-red hair on its body, I guess.
Something like this, but I'm really not an expert for this.
Uh-huh. Well, I remember reading a number of years ago that because they could never find a perfect red heifer, that their plans got stalled. And then there was a cattle farmer in Alabama who was working quite hard to breed a perfect red heifer to ship it off to Israel so they could go ahead
Exactly. And you understand that in the 21st century, those are ridiculous things.
But they're having their effects. Since you wrote the column, you've had this horrible murder in a neighborhood of Jerusalem. And where do you think this is leading?
If those extremists from both sides, mainly from the Israeli Jewish side, will not calm down the flames, this might lead to an explosion. It's a very, very explosive atmosphere.
Well, I heard on the news that Benjamin Netanyahu says that Israel is, quote, will, quote, come down hard on the Palestinians, which makes me wonder, what has he been doing all these years? I mean, he has been coming down hard for quite a while.
I'm not sure. He uses double standards many times, and he says one thing and does the other. And hopefully he will follow up his commitment to calm down the atmosphere.
Well, just things like... Sometimes it makes me think of some sort of a lab experiment where psychologists will have the lab mice on a grill, and they will gradually, they'll heat up the grill, and then they'll sort of see which lab mice start jumping first and start biting the others. I mean, it's like you keep heating up this grill, and eventually people start to go crazy.
That's a very good way of describing the situation, absolutely.
You know, in one way that maybe this is a minor thing, there's one that sort of jumped out at me when I read about it, is what they call the skunk spray, where they have, where Israeli trucks will go through Palestinian neighborhoods spraying this kind of really foul-smelling liquid, and... Why do they do that?
This is one of those means against demonstrations which are supposed not to kill and are supposed to prevent bloodshed. But I don't see it like this. And many times they do it as a collective punishment. And believe me, I... saw it from short distance, and I smelled it, and it's quite, quite terrible, and it doesn't leave you for days after it. It's another way to humiliate people and to punish whole neighborhoods, including children and schools and nurses and hospitals. It's an inhuman mean.
Let me tell our listeners, this is Per Fagren. The show is Fight the Empire. My guest is... Israeli writer Gideon Levy, who writes for the newspaper Haaretz, a rather controversial figure in Israel. In your last paragraph, you talk about They know, you're talking about the Israeli politicians. They know that soon, if not already, a majority here will be for destroying the mosques and rebuilding the temple. I mean, it would seem to me that that would mean a war. Is that what they want?
This will mean this might be much worse than a war, because then you will face the entire Muslim world, not only the Palestinian and not only the entire Arab world. Then you will face hundreds of millions of Muslims who would never forgive this. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this scenario will never happen. But I'm warning that the danger is there, because it doesn't take much. You know, 3, 4, 5 lunatics can burn here a terrible fire.
Well, are the politicians heeding your warning, or are they just kind of shrugging it off?
They are heating the atmosphere. No, not all of them, obviously, but the right wingers for sure. And they are really playing a very, very dangerous and cynical game.
And they somehow think that that Israel will come through this, that they will come out ahead?
Absolutely. But this is really so irresponsible. But hopefully we will not get there.
Well, I read a recent article by Professor Juan Cole, and he is saying that, I guess in a very recent, well, the 19th of November, he was saying that it was a question about a coming civil war in the West Bank and Jerusalem. And he is saying that that the politicians are sort of trying to provoke a civil war as a way of what they call transfer, which means expelling the Palestinians, presumably over the border into Jordan. And Professor Cole seems to think that they can get away with it, that the rest of the world will kind of, you know, make remarks and say, isn't that a terrible thing, but they will do nothing to stop it. Does that seem realistic to you?
No, it doesn't seem realistic to me. By all means, not. We are dealing here with over 2 million people in the West Bank, and I don't see in the 21st century the world letting a state expelling 2 million people. I don't think this is serious. I'm ready to say that the extreme right-wingers of Israel, the nationalists, even they maybe dream about it, but realize that this will not happen. This is not a realistic vision. Maybe years ago, but not anymore. Everyone understands that those things cannot happen in this part of the world.
Yeah, when I read the article, it just, my first reaction was that this would that they'd never get away with this. This would arouse such a kind of a worldwide wave of revulsion, that it would put Israeli embassies everywhere in the world in danger, and just ordinary citizen danger. It would just kind of, it would be a horrible thing to happen.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Another interesting thing I read, it's I mean, is Israelis see themselves, they think the wall is going to protect them from, from the hostility of people surrounding them? I mean, is that a common belief in Israel?
No, because this does not make sense. It goes the opposite way around. The thing is that too many Israelis believe that Israel can live only on its sword, and that Israel can base all its existence on its military power, which history had shown long time ago that no state in history really survived, really lasted for centuries or decades being based only on military force. It doesn't work like this. Mm-hmm. And that's a tragedy, because if Israel is really aiming to continue to live on its sword forever, this will not bring a last peace or justice or a guarantee for the existence of Israel.
Well, that seemed to me the strangest thing about this is that, you know, the reason for Israel's existence is a place of safety for Jews after the Holocaust, but it's becoming, in a way, it seems to me, it's becoming one of the most dangerous places in the world.
As a matter of fact, right now, it is the most dangerous place in the world for Jews. The fact is that there are more Jews killed in Israel ever since the end of the World War II rather than any other place on earth. That's very obvious. But the idea was not only to become a rescue place for Jews, but also to become a place for self-determination, for having a Jewish state. But all those things can really become true if you have a moral background, if you have moral roots. And right now, Israel has problems with its morality as long as the occupation continues.
Well, actually, some religious Jews who say that Jews should not enter the Temple Mount. It's, I guess, because I'm not sure what their reasoning is, but that is that they haven't been purified. That it's not the proper time to even enter that ground. Is that true?
Absolutely. It's the majority of the Orthodox Jews would not go there. Therefore, the whole provocation is much more political than religious, because most of the rabbis, most of the religious leaders are opposing this.
Well, there's another thing I read recently that kind of stuck in my mind. I don't know. Tell me if you think it relates to what we're talking about. This is an article from the Jerusalem Post, and the headline is Defending Israel's Borders from, quote, Climate Refugees. And it's a study by a team of academics, a Professor Arnon Soffer and Dr. Anton Berkovsky from the University of Haifa's Geography Department. And they are saying that, there are climate refugees and they advocate building a total barrier all around Israel, including a sea fence. I'm not sure exactly what that would be, but that this would keep out climate refugees. And it occurred to me that even if you keep out, you could fence off the refugees, but can you fence off the climate? I've seen climate maps and projections saying that the Middle East, including Israel, are going to get hotter and hotter and hotter, and that the sea levels will rise. And do people think about that in Israel very much?
Unfortunately, not.
They just, apparently some people are talking about the climate refugees, but they think that's they haven't gotten to the point of thinking about the climate itself.
Absolutely.
Wow. What is, how are things going for you in Israel now? I know that you were getting a lot of hate mail and a lot of really bad criticism, and that you know from the articles you'd written about the Gaza war, and you actually had a bodyguard. Is that true?
Everything you say is true, and things now seem to calm down a little bit about me, and I definitely feel more secure, because once the war was over, emotions became a little calmer and tolerance became somehow a little wider, but the danger is still there, but this will never stop me of writing what I think.
So your main writing then is through Haaretz, and you have two books out, but they're collections of your articles then?
Right.
It looks to me from, is there still a Jewish left, or is it just kind of faded away?
There is a Jewish left, but it's very, very small and very marginal, unfortunately. I wouldn't like to underestimate the fact that many of those activists are very devoted and courageous people, part of them young, part of them older, but their influence is very, very limited, if at all.
Well, the Israeli right seems to be getting stronger and stronger. I mean, it's how do you see this process unwinding?
No, it's a process that right now it's very hard to foresee the end of it because it's still continuing. Israel is still moving towards more and more nationalism, racism, militarism, and this never stopped in the recent years and does not seem to stop in the coming future. The next government of Israel will definitely be even more right-wing than the current government. And those are not good news for the peace camp in Israel, for anyone who cares about the future of Israel or the future of the Middle East.
Who would lead this government?
It's very hard to tell yet. It can be Netanyahu again. It can be someone like Naftali Bennett, who is the next thing, and he's even a bigger hardliner than Netanyahu. There's no alternative from the left right now.
None at all.
No.
Is there any kind
not
of
a meaningful? Not an alternative with fair chances.
Is there any kind of a center, a rational center, or?
I appreciate the center, the so-called center in Israel, as the right wing in costume, right wing in disguise. It's not really center. They are right wingers, or at least they collaborate with the right wingers.
And so, like, as the settlements, do you think the settlements will just continue, just keep expanding? It's just.
Absolutely.
Well, you seem to occupy. So you will continue writing for Haaretz. How has that been going?
As long as Haaretz will survive and I will survive within Haaretz, I will continue, sure.
Mm-hmm. What about this other newspaper? Isn't there a the Nevada gambling guy Adelson, isn't he publishing a free newspaper, extreme right wing newspaper?
Absolutely. And it turns to become the biggest and most spread Israeli newspaper.
This is kind of amazing that I don't know. I can't think of any equivalent thing here where, say, some rich guy from another country starts a free newspaper. You know, we have our little free shoppers and things like that, but to have a free newspaper that just expresses all this anger, is that the future of Israel?
Right.
Wow.
You will not find a similar example.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time. We've been talking with Gideon Levy, a writer for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, giving us a look at what's happening in Israel now and what might be in store. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Well, stay tuned. Next coming up is Air Cascadia.
That's right. We've got Air Cascadia coming up on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. In 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Today, they present Giants of Journalism, a 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of recording on covert actions on U.S. intelligence agencies. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones speaks with science fiction author, activist, and blogger Cory Doctorow about Information Doesn't Want to Be Free, Art, Copyright, and the Internet. And at 11:45 this morning, join us as Sarika Mehta interviews John Oliver, award-winning writer and satirist. That is all coming up this morning on KBOO, right after Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary, which is coming up next. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
I'm Dime Roberts. In 1989, I took a trip to Taiwan with my mother and produced a radio documentary about our relationship. It's called Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song.
Well, I know our Buddha take me to heaven. I didn't want to come by. She told me, it's not my time yet. If my time come, that's my home.
Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song won the Peabody and was played all over the world. For the 25th anniversary, I've turned this personal radio production into a film. Join me November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for the first ever screening of Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the KBOO homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, November 20th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is whistleblower emeritus Walter Tamositis. Were it not for Walter, we might be in even